Good late afternoon, Aggies and fellow listeners. What a beautiful day it is indeed for the rain. Wonderful rain that we need down here in this valley. Gives us the time to reflect on how beautiful the sun is. You're listening to Aggie Radio. I'm Jake Grossman with the USU Meditation Club, and this is Mindfulness on Air, a show where we talk weekly. We talk about mindfulness. What mindfulness is a form of, can be a form of meditation, yoga. It's a way of paying attention to the present moment by using meditation, yoga, breathing techniques. It involves consciously bringing awareness to our thoughts and feelings without judgments about them. It's a method for observing what is happening right now in our bodies, minds, and the world around us. So as you can see, yes, there is some formal aspects of it that can be done in yoga, meditation, but we can also really just bring this into every part of our lives, every part of our day, especially in school, work, our interactions with others, as well as with ourselves. And so we've been speaking a little bit about what it is and how it impacts us these last couple weeks, if you've tuned in on this series. And if not, you're really missing out. But if you're tuning in now, that's perfect, because you're at the right place. And so we mentioned how this paying attention, why this is important, why we're talking about this on the radio, is it really helps us to be a lot more aware of what's happening. Lots of times we can hold that tension unconsciously, tension in our bodies, just really not recognizing our thoughts. Maybe there's a lot of negative talk, a myriad ways that there may be a disservice or an unskillful means. But bringing this mindfulness, this awareness, or meditative, reflective life helps us to live an intentional, aware, awake life, to where we can then observe, notice those behaviors, notice what's going on in us, around us. And then we can go about making changes if it's something we can do, but it also helps us recognize what we can and can't control, having some equanimity about the things beyond our control. But really, it can just be a focused intention on the present moment, giving you that grounded, that clarity, that clear awareness that just helps one to feel centered. There's a lot of scientific studies we've talked about and some findings of the benefits. It's helpful with stress reduction, emotion regulation, self-discovery. There is lots of studies on the development of the brain, how it beneficial for the mind, the brain, as well as immune system. Just lots of ways that not only does it help with depression or maybe mental illness or just anything, but it's also a proactive thing. It can help promote well-being as well by being grounded, centered, aware of what's going on. And so those are just some words thrown around, really, some definitions, a little container to see what we're talking about. It's a working definition for now, because there's also, it's very dynamic, fluid, and evolving over time. And changes, not only for oneself, but what it is in general. Meditation could start out formally and then go into talking about how we can be aware as we're walking or with our interactions. And so it really, in one's own practice, it can be formal, like I just said, but it can really be a very ordinary day-to-day, moment-to-moment. In fact, it is just recognizing moment-to-moment what's actually going on in you and around you. And so today is another special day, not because you get to hear me again, but because I have another wonderful guest on that I have on today, Greg Madden, Professor Greg Madden. He's a professor of psychology. He's a very wonderful person, a friend of mine as well, and I'm grateful for that friendship. And we'll also be taking his courses coming up in the fall. So
there's
that warning. There's that warning for you as well. So welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, Jake.
And so how are you doing today?
Oh, just fine. Just got back from a conference and kind of getting caught up and enjoying less humidity here in Logan, Utah. I was in San Antonio, where it was very humid, and I sweated a lot. I haven't sweated in years.
So what I'm picking up, though, already is he is very mindful. I told you guys. He's very aware. No. But it's nice to have you here. And one of the questions I always start off asking our guests and different practitioners, because we have professors on, faculty, CAPS, counseling and psychological services, people from there, students, yogis eventually we'll get to. So just broad range. And so it's really nice to get beyond the definition, a couple sentences that I talked about, how to make this more practical and realistic in your life, is what does mindfulness or meditation, what does that really mean to you?
For me, it is a practice, the meditation practice. It's something that I try to do every day. I set time aside for it every morning to sit down and meditate for at least a half an hour. And the kinds of things that I do in the meditation practice, I view it as practice in the sense of a skill. So when you talk about practicing, you know, arithmetic or practicing riding a skateboard or something like that, I view the meditation practice as a period of time in which I practice a set of skills that I find useful as I go about my life. And so I can talk about lots of, I mean, every time that I sit down and practice meditation, it's not always the same. Sometimes I forget things that I'm supposed to practice. And sometimes, you know, I feel like I need more practice on some things versus another thing. So I can talk about some of the things that I practice, and maybe some of your listeners would be interested in that because they might want to practice these things themselves. Should it be that they sit down to do a meditation?
So, since you opened that up a little bit, what do you think about the formal sitting, or just any other way you can take that as well?
Mm-hmm. You mean
as far as developing this skill, turning it into more of just an actual trait?
Mm-hmm.
These tools, developing this practice of a skill. How to go about that exactly?
Yeah, well, it involves practice. I mean, you have to, I have found in my experience that this is something that you really do have to practice it every day, and you have to get really good at it. It needs to become just very fluent, much like, again, with arithmetic, if you know your times tables incredibly well and it's fluent, then as soon as you see 3 times 3, you have the answer instantaneously. And in the same sense, if you practice these meditative practices, these awareness practices, in a meditative sit, then when things are encountered in your life that might lead to difficulties in your life or might give you some consternation in life of one form or another, then you can identify these things as instances where this particular skill that I practice in meditation would be really useful in this moment. And so it gives, you know, again, because you've practiced it so much, it enhances your awareness outside of the meditation practice, such that you can know that, okay, this is that situation in which it would be really good to practice, for example, calm. And so the meditation practice that I do for calm might be really effective here. And because I've practiced it so much, then it, you know, occurs more fluently outside of the meditation situation, and then I find that I can calm myself more in daily life when it's time to be calm, when I'm getting agitated about something. Yeah. So I can go on, or I can answer your next question. Happy to go.
Just one thing that's coming up is it sounds like it's very helpful for this to become integrative part of your life. So you mentioned practice, but that is something that is a process even if there is a formal time that's set aside, this is to be integrated into your life instead of separate from it. So you can still keep that awareness, you can still keep that calm when you're done, quote unquote, with the meditation time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really more practice in a sense that it's the process. It's not necessarily you become a master at it, but it becomes a useful, helpful skill and a tool that's more integrated into your life because, as some studies have found, that these mental states become traits. And so if we're always, we may not think about it very much, but if we're always having a negative state of mind or thoughts or angry, those become habitual patterns and actually a trait we ascribe to somebody. And so I can see how you're explaining thus far that when we're maybe cultivating that calm, it is turning just that practice of an exercise into a lasting trait to then help you throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is correct. As you continue to engage in a behavior across lots of periods of time and across a lot of different contexts, then a lot of different situations, then people might describe that as a trait, you know, a trait of your personality. It's almost as though your personality changes. I think that I can give a concrete example. I think that before I started meditative practice, I think I was had more of a personality of a little bit more person who was a pain in the butt, I think.
Might be able to identify with that a little bit.
And I think in large parts, a lot of this was just, you know, repeated feelings of dissatisfaction in life. And I think that I'm not saying that I'm, depressed or something like this, but what I mean is repeated senses of this isn't enough. And we sort of live in a culture that, that, you know, helps people to feel that way on a regular basis because, you know, through advertising and the like, we're taught that, you know, you shouldn't be satisfied with things as they are right now, because if you are satisfied, then you're not going to work extra hard and buy all these things that they're trying to sell you in television advertisements and the like. And so, you know, I think like a lot of people in this Western culture, I had this sense of, you know, it's never enough. And whatever I had was not sufficiently satisfying. And I always had this sense of, if only I could get this one other thing, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So if only I had one more accolade, or if only I had, you know, a new car.
Fill in the blank pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, our experience, our real experience in life, if we actually are aware and notice, which I don't think I was aware or noticing. I was just on this constant treadmill of this idea. If only I could get this next thing, then I would really be happy. But I never really stopped to notice that once I got that one thing, it really didn't produce a sense of satisfaction, not a sense of lasting satisfaction. So, for example, I bought a car recently. and, you know, I think I'm largely over this if only thing, but... Right. But I knew that there was going to be some satisfaction once I got the car. And so how long did the satisfaction last? Well, I drove it home from Salt Lake and drove it into Logan. And by the time I got to my driveway in Logan, I was pretty much over it. I mean, it just felt like, there's the car. I got to get in the car and I got to drive, you know, and all that anticipated grand satisfaction that I thought I might have, or in the past I thought I might have, it was over. And I had a similar experience years ago. My brother, who's pretty wealthy individual, he let me drive his Mercedes one time. It was a really nice automobile, but after driving it for about 20 minutes, I was just habituated to it, and, you know, any grand satisfaction was pretty much over. And it just, you went back to the status quo, and the status quo from that mindset is one of, well, if only I would have gotten the Mercedes with all leather interior, then I would be really happy. So that constant, sense of, if only I had a little something else, then I'd be happy. You know, when you become more aware, and when you practice becoming aware of, you know, what your mood state is, and it's, you know, your mood state and it following these events that you thought were going to make you satisfied, you actually learn that it's very temporary, any satisfaction that you get. And large part, I mean, most of your time is spent in this state of dissatisfaction, because you're constantly anticipating how much better things could be if only you had that next thing. And so 90-something percent of your life is spent wanting, and the other 2% of your life at the most is spent in actual satisfaction, when that is sort of the way you lead your life. And so getting off that treadmill and spending time aware of that temporariness of any satisfaction I might be able to achieve, and then at the same time cultivating a sense of looking for satisfaction with what you have right now, and spending more time, you know, calming yourself down, getting past this if only idea, and spending time looking at, you know, where am I at right now? And I think, again, when we spend a lot of time in this if only mind, we're not actually observing where we are right now. I tell my class sometimes that humans go through their lives kind of like zombies. I mean, unlike other species on the planet, we spend a lot of time walking around in our own private little cognitive world. Whereas other animals that are not encumbered by language the way that humans are, they are much more aware of what's happening in the world around them. They're much more cognizant of what's happening now. Whereas if you just, I mean, just walk around campus and look for the people that aren't talking to somebody, and you'll kind of see this daydream zombie-like look on people's faces, including mine, as I walk around. And so we're in this sort of private world a lot. And if that private world is filled with a lot of wanting, then there is no appreciation of what is present right now. And there's a lot of dissatisfaction with what you wish was here right now, even though you wouldn't even notice if it was here right now, because you're spending all your time worrying about if only something else was here.
And I really want to highlight that point you brought up, that most of the time is spent wanting something else. So we're not aware of what we already do have. And that's the key right there of why mindfulness, this awareness, is so helpful towards well-being, is it's settling back into right now and noticing what is here, what is going on. And right there, that automatically shifts from future wanting, if only this, to now contentment, but is also breaking down a little bit of that autopilot that we're on. I mean, can't really overstate that enough, that is why mindfulness, that is why what we've talked about in the practices we've gone over sounds simple in nature, but is difficult to remember or to do. And that is why, because we sound, okay, why would that help anything? Why would becoming present into the present moment, following the breath, what's happening right now, how does that have anything to do with all these other benefits we've mentioned, or at least that well-being and satisfaction? Because that key, one of the key, there's many factors into this, but it is really settling into now, because that is turning around instead of striving and looking forward of what I don't have, and so therefore I am unsatisfied, I'm unhappy, I'm not enough because I don't have X or Y. It's one, becoming aware of what we do have, becoming grateful for that. That gives us that contentment right there and appreciation for what is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, you know, the zombie thing is used on purpose because zombies are sort of unaware. They just are shambling mounds walking around, and and they're not really, you know, aware of what's going on in the world. And so when you're living in that that zombie-like state where you're really, you're thinking a lot. I mean, it's not as though, you know, you've got a dead brain during this period of time while you're in zombie mode. You have a very active brain. It's just that you are very, what cognitive psychologists like to call fusion. You're fused with the cognitive thoughts that you're spending time with in this moment. And it's as though you're living in this alternate world at the time. But you don't know it much of the time. You keep going with it. You keep going with these thoughts that you're having in this daydream-like state that we're in. So the meditation practice that I try to practice every morning is just becoming aware of of when that happens. So you were saying just a moment ago, one of the meditation practices is just simple attention to the breath. Mm-hmm. And so if you've never tried this, then I recommend that you try this today because it sounds so simple. So I'm just going to sit and attend to the breath. Well, if you've never done this before, then chances are within the first 30 seconds of spending time just attending to the breath, your mind will wander and you'll go into zombie mode.
Most likely the next breath.
Yeah, yeah.
Most likely 30 seconds is...
Yeah, that's, I mean, 30 seconds is pretty darn good.
For the first time to settle into the moment and be aware of something.
Right. And so this practice of becoming aware of when thoughts arise allows you to be less likely to go into zombie mode, okay? Because when thoughts arise, you notice them, and or this is one of the things that you work on and practice in the meditative sit, is you work on noticing these thoughts at the moment they arise. And then when you see them, basically just saying, okay, I see that the thought is beginning to arise here, and I'm aware of that. So I'm going to practice this awareness of noticing thoughts each time they arise. And so in doing that, it can help you. So again, to go back to this if only thought that is recurrent for, as it was for me, and I think is for an awful lot of people in the world. Mm-hmm. When you practice this, this practice of noticing thoughts as they arise, it helps you to notice when that thought of if only arises. And so it's like an early detection device, being really good at noticing, okay, look, there's that if only thought again. And if you notice it, then you don't get caught up in it. You're less likely to get caught up in it.
Right.
And you can say, that's exactly right. You're aware. And furthermore, and this is the important part, you're aware that that thought is arising, but also you're aware that it's a thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I think when you're in zombie mode, it's not a thought.
Reality.
It's a reality. It feels like a reality. And so that's why you get real caught up in these thoughts, and they cause you so much, you know, dissatisfaction in life. And so it's not as though, I mean, I think the goal of this mindfulness is not to get rid of thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these thoughts, because I still have if only thoughts, but... Right. When I do, like, there was a Mercedes commercial last night, and I was like, wow, this looks like a really nice car.
Better than my brother's.
Yeah, that's right.
Did that come up?
No.
So not that far, not that entangled.
Yeah. So seeing this vehicle, I was like, oh, wow, wouldn't it be great to have that? But as soon, you know, it was easy because I practiced this so much to see this as, okay, that is a thought. You know, and I'm not going to chide myself for having that thought. I'm just going to recognize the fact that I'm having the thought that wouldn't it be cool to have that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then because I recognize it as a thought and not reality, it's easy to defuse from the thought, to just set the thought aside. Okay, I had that thought. That's wonderful. Now, what else?
Because you're not buying into it.
Exactly. I mean, yeah.
You're seeing it. It's people often mention, but then what? You know, after this awareness, mm-hmm. like, just worry about that for now, mm-hmm. because if you're aware, you're seeing this. It's like going into a dark room. As soon as the light is on, there's awareness there, and you're not caught up in it as much because it's lost a little bit, quite a bit of its power, of its energy to go under the radar.
Yep.
In identifying with it, and you're so right. I notice that all the time. To me, it's a big part of my practice to notice the if only or mm-hmm. once this then. I've really just become aware of any form or structure of any way that sentence can be put together. If only mm-hmm. then, or once this happens then.
Right.
And it's slowed down quite a bit. It does still happen. It'll be a tough semester. Once I get through this, then, and it is just a real marker that I still have it, and I still, they're just not buying into it. Mm-hmm. And there's not, mm-hmm. I should be past this, or I should be calm all the time when I do get angry, or when I do get upset. That happens, and it is normal. We mm-hmm. are people, and we have minds, and the mind thinks and strives for if only than this. But we can notice that when it does come up.
Yep.
And a lot of that momentum is yep. taking out yep. by just that awareness.
Yeah, so again, the goal is not to get rid of the thought. It's just to notice the thought for what it is. So because you're never going to get rid of thoughts,
right.
you know, and you're never going to get rid of negative thoughts either. So I think if your goal in life is to get rid of negative thoughts, then it's not going to work.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like the old, whatever you do, don't think of a white bear. Okay. Mm-hmm. So everybody, yes. you know, thought of a white bear as soon as I tell you not to do that. And so if your goal is to not think about certain things, you're just not going to be successful at that. That's just not the way that brains work. The way that brains work is you're going to have these thoughts, and you can't control all of them. So like we were saying before, you know, just in a meditative state, you can't control the kinds of things, the kinds of thoughts that arise. And so even in a meditation, your goal is not to suppress thoughts, but your goal is to just notice them and to be there with them and to see them for what they really are, which is just these thoughts, and not to get so entangled with them that you buy the thought and then you go on an emotional roller coaster ride mm-hmm. with this thought. So another thing that I like to do in meditation is as I'm noticing the thoughts that arise, I'll oftentimes look and see if any emotion comes along with the thought. And then if any kind of an emotion arises with the thought, then that usually tells me that I bought the thought.
Bought into it.
I bought into the thought. And that's okay, as long as I'm aware of what's happening, how this process is working. And then if the emotion occurs, then I'll try to spend some time with the emotion. So not pushing the emotion away. So I don't want to get rid of the emotion. What I want to do is to embrace the emotion, if you will, even if it's a negative emotion. And so the way to embrace the emotion is not to try to candy coat it or anything like that, or tell it, you're my friend or something like right. that. What I try to do is just notice where in my body I'm experiencing mm-hmm. this emotion, and not metaphorically, but where am I actually experiencing this? And so when negative emotions generally arise, when those arise, it's usually, I think it's pretty common in humans, is to feel this is like this tightness in the chest. And so I'll just spend time noticing this tightness in the chest. And inevitably what happens is it doesn't last very long. And so the important lesson there, as which you've heard many times before, is that these things that arise, they are emotions, these thoughts that arise, they're impermanent. They just don't last.
Right.
And so not only is happiness impermanent, but so is our negative emotions. They're
which is impermanent. The good news.
That's good news. But being, you know, cultivating this idea of just noticing it for what it is, I think that removes the discomfort, because it's just a tightness in the chest. It's not described as unbearable or described as, you know, intolerable or awful and all these things.
Or me. Or is I have Excellent. This problem. Yeah. There's something wrong.
Excellent I've, point.
You've yeah. identified with yep. not only the thought or the feeling or the emotion, because then yes. next when we buy into it and are swept away by it, then we identify as me. There's yep. something wrong. Yep. I'm not supposed to have this thought, or I got to get rid of this feeling, or why can't I have that? If I had that, then I would be happy. Mm-hmm. Back to that. Because this all stems yep. from not being with what is,
yep.
trying to push away. But it is, it comes and it goes.
Yeah, and that's a hard concept to understand. It took me a long time to gain the understanding that I currently have, which I consider to be not complete understanding. It's this idea of, you know, trying to defuse from this idea of self also mm-hmm. in the meditation. So one of the ways that I try to do this in meditation is to, as thoughts arise, I oftentimes will think about, where did that come from? And I will ask myself, did I create that thought? So try it. Just sit for a few minutes, do it later. Sit for a few minutes and just observe the thought that arises and ask yourself, did I choose to have that thought? And if you're being honest with yourself, the answer is no. You did not choose to have that thought, because if you're meditating, chances are what you're trying to do is you're trying to be present with what is actually here. So attention to the breath, attention to the way your body yeah. actually feels and the like. And so when thoughts arise, it's not like you said, hey, I think I'll have this thought about, mm-hmm. you know, the Beatles right now or something like that. It just happens, okay? And then, so it gives you the sense of an awful lot of the things that arise in your life. You don't really choose for these right. things to arise. And so it begins to, and then when you think about, where did this come from? You know, where did this thought of the Beatles come from, for example? And what inevitably happens is you realize that, well, it's all these experiences that I've had, you know, with listening to Beatles music when I was younger and the like. All of those experiences led to this event that happens right now. Now, why it happens right in this moment right now, I have no idea. But, you know, clearly it's affected by all these past experiences that I've had. Mm-hmm. And so it begins to give you this sense of, again, I didn't choose to do this. It's happening, but it seems to be due to all these past experiences that I've had. And so what ends up coming of that, a realization that comes of this kind of awareness of the origin of your own thoughts and the origin of your own actions, is this idea that my thoughts and my actions are largely determined by all of these experiences that I've had, combined with my DNA and my body and all those kinds of factors that interact to produce the person that I am right now.
So just basically conditioning.
Yeah.
Not in the necessary classical conditioning sense.
Right. But learning processes general. Yeah.
That we've conditioned for
exactly.
causes and conditions. You plant an apple seed or peach seed, whatever. That's what grows.
If that'll grow, yeah.
If that grows, I'm not the best gardener. But if you plant basil plant, basil grows.
Yeah,
and right. So that's how we conditioned our mind. And so when we're constantly angry or having these negative thoughts, even though they do just arise, we're not choosing. It's because of certain causes and conditions. But I also wanted to point mm-hmm. out, mm-hmm. this is looking at it the other way. When we're attaching to those and saying, no, this is really happening and it's true and it's me and something's wrong. We can also look at it the other way. If you were, you could just say, then I just want to be happy now and I'll always be happy. And just having that thought, then you would be able to control. So this idea of,
if only,
if only. So this idea of impermanence and not an inherent self there, mm-hmm. saying and doing it all, it makes sense that way as well, because then you could just say, I don't want to have this thought, or I don't want to have this feeling, I'll have this one, and then that would happen.
Yeah.
So it's just another way of pointing out, you can sit in meditation or notice the negative emotions or positive, and where did this come from?
Mm-hmm.
But you can also theorize it by looking at it the other way. If you were in control of every single thought, then you could say, I don't want to ever have these ones.
Right.
And well, I only want to have these ones, but it doesn't happen.
It doesn't
and
happen.
And so we just no. are here with our present experience.
Yeah. Right. So accepting, you know, what is, because as you were saying earlier in the show, accepting the things that can't be controlled. And so if it is that so much of what, you know, arises for you, in your thinking and your actions, if it is that a lot of that is out of your control, which I think objectively it is, I mean, we all have this sense that we're in control.
Right.
but if you spend any time really thinking about the world around you and the origins of your behavior, then you come to the realization that this sense of control is largely an illusion.
Right.
That you don't have anywhere near as much control as you believe, because all of these past experiences are what have led to your actions now. You may have the very real sense, I think we all have a very real sense that we're in control, but I think objectively, what we do and how we do it, it is so much affected by our past experiences and the like. So the point of trying to lose this sense of I'm responsible, I am the originator of all of my actions. And noticing that, you know, the world around you is responsible for a lot of your actions, I think it gives you the sense of it relaxes you a little bit, because the sense of I have to protect this self, this idea of the originator, the self, the thing that's responsible for all of my actions, I think we can get a sense that I need to protect that self. That it's kind of like a reputation,
right,
if you will. Yeah. And so noticing that you are not the originator of an awful lot of your actions and the pattern of your actions that people would then call your personality and your reputation, it produces a sense of just chilling a little bit in
that
knowing that, yeah,
on.
That I am not the originator and I don't have to take, you know, respond, well, that's a totally different subject matter. So then the other nice thing about it is it gives you the sense that the same is true of everybody else in the world. And so everybody else in the world, their actions also are influenced by all of their experiences. And so it gives you a sense of the way I interact with people influences who that person is. Okay. And so it builds a sense of connectedness between people, because you come to this, again, this realization that the way I interact with people, that's their experience. And their experience is what leads to their future actions. And so if I want to make the world a better place, then I should recognize that my actions are going to influence other people's actions. Hmm. And my current actions have been influenced by the actions of others as well. And so, again, it produces this sense of interconnectedness between your fellow human beings, and I think it produces a wanting to be more kind to other people. At least it has in me.
And even highlights more what we've been saying, that same interaction with yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
Having that peace as well.
Right, right.
Is the same description, your interactions with others goes mm-hmm. for yourself, because mm-hmm. lots of times we help to foster some of those mental ruts that we end up in So I was kind of wondering, you've given us a little bit of a lot of good stuff on your sitting practice, mm-hmm. and how this helps you with your interactions with others. What is what about off the cushion? Or meditation does not have to be, or mindfulness does not have to be just on a cushion. I mean, it can be in any seated position, even standing, walking. We've talked about mm-hmm. on previous episodes as mm-hmm. well, and we've talked about many times before.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some, for some folks listening who maybe have tried sitting practice and say they quote-unquote can't, because there's some things that can work on there, but what about people who just don't take to sitting or the formal meditation?
Mm-hmm.
Just what are some things you do throughout your day to help integrate this off the cushion, mm-hmm. as it were, mm-hmm. and some just other techniques or perspectives on what we're talking about?
Yeah. So off the cushion, let's see. I think, so are you interested in like how to do meditation practices while in everyday life, or how to bring awareness and mindfulness to everyday life?
Yeah. The latter, and then you can go from there.
So one practice that I've been doing for a while, just to sort of remind myself as I'm, you know, in my everyday life, is this, I think it's a Zen saying that people have used, and I've heard Joseph Goldstein and other people use the saying to remind themselves as they're, you know, going about life, is when you notice that you're thinking, you know, and you're kind of getting fused with those thoughts, and you can kind of feel yourself going into zombie mode,
right,
then you can easily remind yourself by just saying, when walking, for example, when walking, just walk. And I find it really instructive to do that. So when you say that to yourself, for me, what happens is then I start noticing just what is the sensation of walking. Okay, and then I'll get bored with that, and I'll start noticing the things that are around me when I'm walking, the actual environment that is around me when I'm walking. And so it brings me out of zombie mode, which is the mode of just being lost in thought and being fused with my thoughts, and it allows me to spend some time with what is actually occurring right here and now. And the upside of that is I get to appreciate things in the environment. So last night, for example, I was at my daughter's soccer tryouts, and I was walking from the soccer tryouts to my car when it started raining. And so as I was walking, I kind of noticed that some thoughts were arising, and so I just said to myself, when walking, just walk. And so then it's like, it was just like somebody turned on a light. And then I started noticing that where I was, which was out at this soccer field, that I had to walk across this wooden bridge. And when I said that to myself, I was already walking across the wooden bridge. And as soon as I said that to myself, I noticed, oh my goodness, look at how beautiful this bridge is with all of the water on it right now with the rain. The grain of the bridge is coming out, and it was just beautiful. And I don't think I've ever would have noticed this had I been in zombie mode just walking across this bridge. And then furthermore, I looked around, and the bridge was going over a swamp area, and the swamp was just gorgeous. I mean, it was just beautiful with all the plants, with all the rain that we've been having lately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just absolutely beautiful. And so instead of being lost in thought and having very little appreciation for where I really was, just saying that, you know, very quick phrase, when walking, just walk, really put me in connection with what was happening right there. And it just enriched my life in that moment so much, just to realize where I was. Now, the other thing that I've noticed in doing that is that when you're out of zombie mode, then you start noticing other humans that
less,
are...
Less zombies, yeah. And you start seeing more humans.
You start seeing more humans. And then, you know, again, with the sense of cultivating a sense of interconnectedness and how we all kind of work together. And,
yeah.
You know, it when you're not in zombie mode, you notice that other people are there, and then it's kind of like, ah, well, here's an opportunity to be kind to somebody. And so as you see the person, you know, you look them in the eye and you say hello, even if they're a complete stranger. And, you know, I found that to be a very simple, low cost and effective practice for not only making my life a little bit better, but perhaps somebody else's life. Because when somebody says hi to me, I always like, oh, well, that was kind of nice, you know, when somebody says that. Yeah.
Especially when it's taking that moment to actually pause for a little bit, look at you and say hi, not a habitual just going past somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
And so those do really sink in. And so a lot of great stuff, ways to use this in daily life and practices to look at as you're meditating and being aware. And also, it was very important that you brought this last little bit up about how this isn't just something that's so dry or scientific. I hope you've been listening, have been impressed as much as me that this really does impact how you interact with other people and that kindness that you bring in. So if you're not one to want to read academic journals or scientific publishings, we can just dive right in and try awareness for ourselves. It is a very good thing to do, to be aware. It enriches our lives, appreciation for what's around us, not identifying or stuck in the ruts of what if or if only if. And that aliveness, that groundedness, that connection with yourself and others, it's a really incredible experience to have.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Greg, I'd like to thank you for being on. It's been wonderful to have you and appreciate your wisdom and your sharing.
Sure. My pleasure.
And so, if you don't mind, maybe we will put some of these practices, put them to work. And so we've been talking about mindfulness and all the words, but if you're listening and you'd want to not necessarily have to quit everything you're doing, you may be in the middle of work or studying or school or even doing the dishes, as Greg just highlighted, that we can bring this awareness to what we're doing now. So you may take a moment to just notice what's around you, what you're doing right now. You may think that's obvious, but then when we look into it, are we noticing as we're studying or working or doing the dishes, are we hunched over? Is there a lot of tension in our bodies? What are our thoughts right now? So when we start looking into it, there's a lot more going on. So not trying to change our experience, not trying to hold on to things, create something, or push something away. Just take a moment to relax into the body. Notice any sounds around you. Maybe there's people talking, fans, the rain, if it's raining where you are. Allow yourself to come into what you're feeling. What's going on for you right now? Just checking in how your experience is. Notice if you're wondering what's all this about. Just notice any thoughts, reactions, feelings. They come and they go. Bring your awareness to your body, to the contact you're having with your chair or the floor, if you're standing, contact of your feet. Notice the sensations of your back against your chair, sit bones, holding a pen or paper in your hand or typing on a keyboard. Just notice what that feels like to be in this body, to be here now. We can use this as a gateway to bring us to this moment, as mentioned. Notice the sensations in the body, if there's tension. Helps us to be aware of what's happening right now. May even try out bringing your awareness to the breath, not changing it in any way. Just notice your breathing. It could be the air coming in and out the nostrils, the palate, chest rising, belly expanding. Maybe the sensations accompanied by the breath. Just what does it feel like from the inside out? The felt quality of breathing. Have we ever noticed our breath or the sensations in the body? Just tuning inwards. Pausing, bringing our awareness to the body and to the breath, stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system. And with each exhale, really allows for that contentment, the opposite of fight or flight. On each out breath, we release the tension, any stress or worries. Any worries that's going to happen in the future, anything that's already happened in the past. Just feel the energy and the aliveness of the breath as you breathe in. Let go of that tension as you breathe out. So that when we do have to plan and worry and do skillful thinking, will be more effective, clear, because we've taken this time to settle in, to be grounded, to come home to this body, to this moment, allowing the mind to settle. You may notice the sensations in your palms. Any tingling or pulsing, maybe numbness, just whatever you're feeling. What is it like? As if your mind was located there, from the inside out, not thinking about it. What does it feel like to have hands? Just allow them to relax, releasing any tension. Becoming aware of the belly, soften, relax the belly, feeling any tension in your shoulders, just relax them down and back, releasing the jaw. Notice if there's any tightness around your eyes. Or eyebrows. Just if you can, allow that tension, any stress to melt away. Anywhere you feel some holding, just set it down for a moment. Be with what is. May be different for you. The mind may keep wandering. That's fine. Just notice that. Return back to the sensations of the body, the breath. Feeling yourself relax into what is. Allow that tension to just melt down your spine. Opening each vertebrae, down your hips and arms, out your legs and feet into the earth. Just feel that dance of aliveness within you. This is a practice we can take anywhere, do anytime. You can always come back to the breath, to this moment. As we've talked, the sensations of the body, that's what grounds us, kind of like an anchor to right now. Our breathing, the sensations, they're only happening right now. So when we're lost in thought, it helps to bring us to the present moment, to build these practices, to cultivate the mind, to everything we've been talking about. So as you continue working or your interactions with your family, even driving, I've mentioned this before, keeping your eyes open there, you can notice if we're gripping the steering wheel, if our shoulders are tight, tension in our belly, especially in a difficult conversation you're having with somebody, you can always come back to that. Where are you holding? And try to consciously relax that and see if that allows you to be more present with another person and maybe diffuse some of that hostility or just some anxiety. Just be with it. We can always deal with it if there's something we can do. But if there's not, maybe we can bring an awareness, a kind, open, curious awareness to that. As we've mentioned, there's plenty of groups. There's meditation here on campus, Wednesdays, 3 p.m., open to all. It's free, where we explore different techniques. Sometimes go walking outside, typically not in the rain, but we have. There's groups around the valley, like we've mentioned. And all that information is on our webpage with many other resources. So if you go to your MyUSU portal page, the home page, there's an icon at the top left with two people. As you hover the mouse over that, you can go down to manage communities, which brings a list of all clubs and organizations on campus. On the right side, click join, just to be able to view it. Don't feel like you've committed too much. On the line where you see USU Meditation Club, if you hit join on the right and then open in the middle next to the name, that'll then take you to the page. And then the next time you go to the icon on the left, that drop down menu, you'll have the USU Meditation Club or anything you're affiliated with. And then there you can see all the categories in the middle of the page, where there's different activities of visiting teachers that may be in the area, teaching meditation, some instructions, our past radio show archive, resources of how to meditate or scientific papers, websites that have help on mindfulness, meditation, all sorts of traditions, techniques. And so if you're not able to make it to a group, you can check those out to learn or to help support a practice. And also, it's an online community. It's a forum where we can also start a thread or respond to one and ask other people and get their wisdom and help there as well. And so there's a few options there. And like I said, we'll be back next Thursday at 3 p.m. Before I go, one last reminder, this Saturday, about an MS awareness, the Rapid Wheelchair Transit Wheelchair Racing at Mount Logan Middle School, Saturday, May 30th, this Saturday, from 1 to 3 p.m. There's door prizes, prizes for winning the races, best decorated wheelchair. It's an event to bring the disabled, abled, young, old, everybody alike together to have fun, raise awareness for MS, and should just be a great time. Like I said, I'll be there, and it sounds like there's lots of great prizes. And everybody, once again, you're listening to Aggie Radio. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. Stay safe, enjoy your weekend, and thanks again, once again, to having Greg on. And everybody, stay safe and stay aware. Have a good one.